Jotham here in 2 Chronicles 27. What are we to make of Jotham? Verse 2, he did that which was right in the eyes of Yahweh, according to all that his father Uzziah had done. However, he didn't enter into Yahweh's temple, and the people still did corruptly. Well, what are we to make of this? These records of the kings I find so interesting, because you do have a window here into how God really looks at people. Not that we can judge ourselves, but it is fascinating to see how God rates people and the sort of things he focuses upon. Well, Jotham did right according to what his father had done. You could take that as meaning that his spirituality was to some degree a living out of parental expectation. This comes to its full term in Solomon, who talks about David, my father David. That phrase occurs hundreds of times on his lips. And quite clearly, he was living out parental expectation until eventually, in his middle age, his wives turned away his heart. He built temples for their idols. His heart was turned away from Yahweh. And as I read it, you then come to the nihilism of Ecclesiastes in his old age, where he's turned away completely from God. And, well, that's what the record says, that his wives turned away his heart from Yahweh. He has no hope there of the kingdom, no understanding of the future Messiah. He thought he was it, but then he lost it. And how did he get to that position? Well, because his faith, supposedly, was all not personal. It was a living out of the expectations of his father. I am risen up in my father's place. I am the son of David, so he liked to think. Well, Jotham also followed in the path of his father Uzziah, but he gets the commendation that he did what was right in the eyes of Yahweh, which is no small commendation. So I think it's very difficult for people who've grown up with believing parents to actually personalize it. And such people can often start asking themselves the question, well, do I really believe? Am I not just living out parental expectation, especially if it goes back to grandparents and even great-grandparents? Well, God will work in your life, be assured of that, so that you come to him personally, because he wants you. And his words come down through the centuries to you. My son, give me your heart. That's what he wants, and that's what he's searching for. And yet it is also true, on the other hand, that the whole idea of the commandments to raise a godly seed mean that parents do have a good influence upon their children. This is why God loved Abraham. He said, I know that he is going to train his children after him to be my people. So, of course, there would be no point in raising your children in a godly way unless that was intended to work, as it were. So, with all these things, you see how God weighs up all the factors. He did right in the eyes of Yahweh according to what his father Uzziah had done, but he didn't enter into the temple in the inappropriate way that Uzziah had done, and the people still did corruptly. And Isaiah was prophesying at the time of Jotham, and yep, that's the idea of Isaiah, that the people and the leadership are deeply corrupt and spiritually leprous. And yet, despite that, despite the leadership and the people being so corrupt, Uzziah, on the other hand, does do what is right in the eyes of Yahweh. The implication could be that he should have been more proactive in trying to reform the people. So it's not as if God just operates on a pass or fail basis. He values every individual, and he weighs up the pluses and the minuses, and that record is still here. And you may say, oh, well, he sort of got a pass because he did what was right in the eyes of Yahweh. That's what God says. And, well, yeah, okay, so there were some negatives, but yeah, bottom line is pass. Well, that would be, I think, a misunderstanding, really, of how things ultimately shall be. Okay, yes, at the day of judgment there are only two exits, to the right or to the left, so if you wish you can see it in terms of pass or fail, but I think that that is a very limited perspective if that is all we think it is. Yes, as I say, that far, yes, that is so. But the nature of our eternity will reflect how we have lived now. And so if in this life, like with Jotham, he does follow his father Uzziah's pattern of spirituality, although Uzziah was far from perfect, and he avoids his father's grosser sin of entering the temple, and he doesn't deal with the people's corruption as he should have done. But that is still going to be eternally reflected in how he is going to be eternally. So, verse 4, he built cities in the hill country of Judah, built castles and towers. That's exactly what his father Uzziah had done. And I notice in some of these records of the kings that you notice that the son, when he comes to the throne, tends to, in the early part of his reign, repeat exactly what his father did. And that is what Uzziah did. He built a huge amount of stuff, and his son Jotham does the same. And then verse 5, he fights with the Ammonites and prevails, and the Ammonites pay him tribute. That's exactly what we read in 2 Chronicles 26, that Uzziah his father did. He also fought with Ammon and got tribute out of them. So it's as if he seeks to replicate the actions of his father. And I suppose that is the usual psychological response of a son when his father dies, to live out the life of the father in the son. But, of course, motivations for serving God are to be purer than that, not simply psychological reactions, not motivated by a desire, even subconsciously, to live out the expectations of our fathers. And we need to examine ourselves, because even if your parents weren't believers, even if you weren't raised in a believing home, all the same, there is always going to be a sense of serving God out of expectations of others, motivated by others' expectations. And usually, even if you do not have believing parents or weren't raised as a believer, there is somebody who, in a human secular sense, has been your spiritual father, someone who brought you to Jesus Christ. Maybe you never met the person, maybe you read their books, or maybe you met them, it was a guy at work or whatever who led you to Jesus. And whatever, there usually is some influential figure, some father figure. And no father figure ultimately can waft you into God's kingdom. God wants a personal relationship with you. So let's not be like Solomon, and let's not serve God out of living out the expectations of others. Not at all. Let's try and learn the lesson of Jotham that, this is not a bad thing to do, to follow godly examples. Of course it's not. But in the end, you've got to be very careful that you're not like Jotham, go out and get tribute out of the Ammonites because that's what Dad did. Go building a load of stuff because that's what Dad did. God wants us to be completely unique, or we are completely unique before him, because we shall be given a name, Jesus says in his letters to one of the churches, that's written on a stone that nobody else knows apart from him and you. And the allusion, I think, is to how there was a way between friends of taking a stone, a pebble, writing your name and his name on it, or whatever, your friend's name, your girlfriend's name, or just your mate's name, and breaking the pebble. And, of course, the pebble broke in a unique way. You kept one side, the other person kept the other side. And that was like a bond between you. And nobody else quite knew what had been written on the pebble. You had half the message, and you knew that the other one had the other half, whatever they were in the world. And Jesus uses that figure. And I rather like this, because it shows that although in one sense salvation is collective, in another sense it is deeply personal. It is between him and you alone, and no one else can quite enter into that, because as Jesus says, nobody else will know that name apart from you and me. And that is That is a beautiful way of putting it, I think. And all living out of parental expectation, community expectation, cultural expectation, if you live in a supposedly Christian culture, well, yeah, all that is just brushed away beneath this wonderful idea of absolutely personal relationship with God and Jesus. As Job says, that in my flesh I shall see God and not another. And the little import, or big import, of that little phrase, and not another, I think implies this shall be totally personal, that I will see God with my own eyes, in my flesh, as it were, me, resurrected, and it will just be him and me, with all the feelings that there could only be between him and me that nobody else can enter into.